A stranger corners you at a party, demanding to know why you look the way you do. Your doctor dismisses your symptoms without examination, insisting weight loss will cure everything. Family members monitor your plate at dinner, offering unsolicited advice wrapped in concern. This isn't a dystopian future. It's the daily reality for millions of fat people navigating a world that treats their bodies as public property, open for commentary, correction, and control. We live in a society where nearly 70% of Americans are categorized as overweight or obese, yet anti-fatness remains one of the last socially acceptable forms of discrimination. The assumption underlying all this scrutiny, that fatness is simply a choice, a moral failing, a problem demanding an immediate solution. But what if everything we've been told about fat bodies is wrong? The calories in, calories out mantra ignores biological reality. Lipedema affects up to 10% of people assigned female at birth, causing painful, diet-resistant fat accumulation. PCOS disrupts metabolism in 6 to 12% of people. Common medications for depression, anxiety, and diabetes frequently cause significant weight gain. Even successful weight loss backfires. Biggest Loser contestants' metabolisms permanently suppressed, burning 700 fewer calories daily years later. Most damning, 75% of studies show dieting predicts future weight gain, not loss. The body defends its highest sustained weight through hormonal changes, increased hunger, and decreased energy expenditure. What we dismiss as personal failure is biological response. For someone wearing size 26 plus to reach a healthy BMI requires losing over 200 pounds and maintaining it for life, achieved by fewer than 1% of people. Studies of identical twins reveal body size is 70 to 80% heritable. Individual outcomes are determined far more by social factors, racial inequality, healthcare access, poverty, than personal behaviors. When lifestyle changes fail, some turn to extreme measures. Children's National Hospital now performs gastric sleeves and bypasses on children with no minimum age, requiring only 3 years of high BMI and understanding of lifelong dietary commitment. One case study discussed surgery on a 2.5-year-old. These interventions assume parents can control their children's size, ignoring genetic reality and historical oppression patterns. Threatening parenthood to control marginalized bodies has deep roots. The American eugenics movement forcibly sterilized disabled people and immigrants. Between 1973 and 1976, 3,406 documented cases targeted American Indians. Today, Black children face CPS investigation at rates up to 3 times higher than white children, while Native American children are removed 4 times more often. Parent-child separation causes profound trauma, altering brain development and increasing anxiety, depression, addiction, and chronic disease. Removing fat children for their health likely worsens the very markers justifying removal, as chronic stress drives inflammation, metabolic disorders, and weight gain. Rejection from loved ones cuts deepest when disguised as concern. Fat people face constant monitoring, employers linking promotions to weight loss, dates offering diet advice, family members gifting too small clothes as motivation. A 2005 study found 98% of fat participants reported disparaging remarks from family, while 86% said loved ones were embarrassed to be associated with them. This surveillance sends clear messages. I'm watching your body. I disapprove. Your existence is a problem you failed to solve. The helpful advice assumes thin people are weight loss experts whose bodies represent hard-won victories rather than different genetics. When loved ones monitor food intake or offer unsolicited calorie counts, they're asserting ownership over someone else's body, mirroring historical oppression patterns from colonial control to contemporary attacks on bodily autonomy. As Sabrina Strings documents in Fearing the Black Body, anti-fatness has deep roots in anti-blackness and white supremacy. Ellen Maud Bennett's viral obituary contained a dying wish that women of size advocate fiercely for their health. Doctors dismissed her symptoms as weight-related for years, delaying her terminal cancer diagnosis. Rebecca Hiles endured bloody coughing fits for 6 years before receiving a lung cancer diagnosis. Patty Neese's progressive scoliosis was misdiagnosed as obesity pain despite 70 pounds of weight loss. Research confirms this systemic failure. 53% of women report doctor shaming, while physicians spend less time with fat patients and describe appointments as a waste of time. Even obesity specialists demonstrated implicit bias, believing fat people are lazy, stupid, and worthless. Discrimination intensifies for patients with multiple marginalized identities. Fat transgender patients face BMI restrictions for gender-affirming surgeries, while Black patients routinely receive inadequate pain treatment. This bias kills when treatable diseases progress to terminal stages. The body mass index has troublingly unscientific origins. Belgian mathematician Adolphe Quetelet developed it in the 1830s as a population measurement tool, explicitly stating it should never assess individual health. His formula derived exclusively from white European men's data, yet now applies universally. Insurance companies and financial interests, not evidence, drove BMI's medical dominance. In 1998, the NIH lowered the overweight threshold from 27.8 to 25, instantly categorizing 29 million Americans as overweight without new science. 8 of 9 weight loss medication panel members had direct ties to pharmaceutical companies manufacturing weight loss drugs. In 2019, Lizzo attended a Lakers game in an oversized t-shirt dress with a cutout, more conservative than her stage wear, and revealing less skin than the thin woman beside her or the Laker girls dancers. When she twerked briefly on the Jumbotron, internet commenters erupted, insisting she glorified obesity. That same year, fat influencer Anna O'Brien modeled for Gillette's Venus Razors in a two-piece bathing suit. The backlash was so intense that Gillette defended their decision. Venus is committed to representing beautiful women of all shapes, sizes, and skin types. Accusations of glorifying obesity follow fat people everywhere, at beaches, gyms, in media, whenever they exist without expressing shame. Activities celebrated when thin people do them become controversial when fat people participate. The objection isn't about bestowing glory, but about treating fat people as if they deserve to exist publicly without performing shame. When thin people insist, "You're not fat, you're beautiful," they revealed their own fear, not of the word itself, but of being treated the way fat people are treated. Anti-fat discrimination remains legal in 48 states, with only Michigan and Washington offering protections. The economic toll is severe. Fat women lose $4,879 annually in wages, nearly double the $2,646 lost by fat men, while very thin women earn $22,000 more than very heavy women each year. Among workers with BMIs over 35, 40% report workplace discrimination. Meanwhile, 45% of British employers admit being less likely to hire fat candidates, often relegating them to lower-wage, non-public-facing roles. The criminal justice system deepens this bias. Thin male jurors more readily convict fat women and predict reoffending, while anti-fat beliefs strongly predict victim blaming in sexual assault cases. Dismantling these systems demands policy change, legal protections, and cultural transformation, creating accessible spaces, challenging discriminatory practices, and recognizing how anti-fatness intersects with racism, ableism, and misogyny. Most importantly, it means listening to fat people about their lived experiences rather than imposing thin-centered solutions. In a world treating fat bodies as problems demanding solutions, the most radical act is recognizing that all bodies deserve dignity, healthcare, and the right to exist without justification. Your body isn't public property. It never was.